When Jesus had finished saying all these things, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified." Then the chief priests and the elders of the people gathered in the palace of the high priest, who is called Caiaphas, and they conspired to arrest Jesus by stealth and kill him. But they said, "Not during the festival, or there might be a riot among the people." Now, while Jesus was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very costly ointment. And she poured it on his head as he sat at the table. But when the disciples saw it, they were angry and said, "Why this waste? For this ointment could have been sold for a large sum and the money given to the poor." But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why do you trouble the woman? She has performed a good service for me. For you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. By pouring this ointment on my body, she has prepared me for burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever this good news is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in remembrance of her." Then one of the 12, who was called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, "What will you give me if I betray him to you?" They paid him 30 pieces of silver. And from that moment on, he began to look for an opportunity to betray Jesus. This is the word of the Lord. It's a story that makes a lot of Presbyterians sit up and take notice, because we've never been big fans of waste. We don't like waste. Around here, the candles on Christmas Eve get reused. I don't know if you knew that. But one of our careful volunteers once noted, it takes about 3 minutes to sing Silent Night, and if Reverend Carter doesn't give a long benediction, we can use each candle for about 4.5 minutes, so we can get another year out of a candle. Sometimes we can get 6 more years out of a candle. We don't like waste. Across the hall, in the office, we recycle the worship bulletins. We cut up the leftover committee agendas and use them for note paper, and manila folders, still in decent shape, get a fresh label and a new life. We used to have in our book of order guidance offered on how to have a Christian wedding. And the guidance used to say, and I wish it still did say, the bridal party will not go to undue expense. Yeah, try that in the Abingtons. But the idea is good stewardship. Don't waste anything. No one's going to eat the nut cups, so don't get them. My home church, a Presbyterian church, sent an email to all the members yesterday. I'm still on the list, 40 years later. They are inviting everybody in the congregation to bring their own coffee mug and keep it on a new shelf in Fellowship Hall. And everybody can rinse out their own mugs, the note said, and we won't buy so many disposable cups. It's a way to cut down on excess waste. You getting the theme here? Yesterday, in the next room, I led a workshop for about a dozen lay preachers, and for hospitality, I went over to Sam's Club, picked up some blueberry muffins, big fat blueberry muffins, and we plugged in a pot of coffee. There were leftover muffins, so they may reappear at coffee hour today. There's also about a gallon of leftover coffee, but Karen told me we can't keep that for you. I understand, I'm a fan of fresh coffee. But it did hurt a little bit to throw it out. I'm a Presbyterian. I don't like waste. So some of us are inclined to agree with the disciples. An anonymous woman slips into a dinner party in the village of Bethany, just uphill from Jerusalem. She cracks open an overpriced jar of aromatic oil, and then she pours it over the head of Jesus. Peter, James, and John, and all the rest grumble and sneer. What a complete waste. Think of how much that ointment cost. Now it's gone. The room smells pretty, but the ointment is gone. It's just like throwing away money. And by some accounts, a lot of money. One version of the story says it was valued at 300 days' wages. How much money would that be? Stop and think about, if you're working on your taxes, how much money did you make last year? And what would 82% of that be? And if you invested it or used it to purchase this oil, pour it over a man's head, spill it on the floor where it's now evaporating, would that be a good idea? Sure, they're in the house of Simon the leper, whoever he was. He's a leper, and I'm sure because he's a leper, the house didn't smell very good. A little perfume would go a long way, but $65,000 of perfume in one big splash? It seems so excessive. And we wouldn't want it to be wasted. Turn down the thermostat when you leave the room. Keep the lights off if you don't need them. And next time, I learned my lesson, don't make 30 cups of coffee for 12 people, especially if three of them are drinking tea. Waste not, want not. I think of the book of Proverbs, the 21st chapter, which I wish I could get our children to read. Precious treasure remains in the house of the wise, but the fool devours it. Or this one. Whoever loves pleasure will suffer want. Whoever loves wine and gold will not be rich. In other words, stop wasting your money. Don't throw it around. Be prudent. And so naturally, the 12 disciples are upset. The Greek word actually is bigger than that, furious. Incensed, indignant, rip-roaring mad, and they yell in unison in one voice, "We could have sold that ointment and given that money to the poor." That would be a noble thing to do with the money. Feed the poor for another day. Give it to the needy. Get them off your guilty conscience for just a little bit. And they do have a good point, because do you remember what comes right before this story? The very last thing Jesus said to the whole world? Whoever does this for the least of these has done this unto me. Matthew 25. Remember that one? Feed the hungry. Clothe the naked. Take care of the needy. And then she slips into this dinner party and dumps the expensive perfume all over Jesus' head. What a waste. Is that what you're going to do with the money? And Jesus interrupts and says, "Leave her alone." But Jesus, leave her alone. She has done a beautiful thing. But Lord, look at the waste. Listen, he says, it's not waste, it's generosity. Don't you know the difference? She has anointed me for burial. Which is striking, because this is the Gospel of Matthew. And in the Gospel of Matthew, a few chapters later, nobody can get to the tomb fast enough to anoint Jesus for burial there. So this woman, whoever she is, has already done it at great cost with extraordinary extravagance. Leave her alone, he says. She has done a good work. She has shown me her generosity. She has treated me with utmost respect. And that's what she does with the money. Meanwhile, as we hear, this brief story is entangled with another story, which is also about money. The religious leaders have nothing but scorn for Jesus. They've been watching him closely since chapter 9, and here it is in chapter 26. The scribes complain to the Pharisees about him. The Pharisees grumble to the elders. The elders buzz like hornets around the heads of the chief priests. All of them concur, we must get rid of this troublemaker, Jesus. Now, take note. They presume to take this matter into their own hands. While Jesus, meanwhile, is completely obedient to the Father in heaven. The authorities have this illusion that they can somehow make things happen, that they're in control. And meanwhile, for Jesus, it is the Father's will that he be handed over. They conspire to take him by stealth when no one watches. They don't want to be seen for their treachery. And then the opening comes. Judas, one of the 12, appears at the door of the inner chamber and says, "What will you give me if I hand him over to you?" And they offer him money. Turn over Jesus. Sell him out. That's what they invite him to do with the money. How much money? 30 pieces of silver. Biblically speaking, 30 shekels of silver. That's not very much. That's a paltry sum, an infinitesimally small fraction of what that expensive ointment would have cost. And it's kind of pathetic. No human being is worth a mere 30 shekels of silver. It's the scholar Dale Bruner who says that Matthew is pointing to the other Bible passage that we heard this morning from the prophet Zechariah. Zechariah is called the underappreciated shepherd. He tells the spiteful, money-grubbing people of his day, "If it seems right to you, give me my wages." And they give him 30 shekels of silver. It's an insult. And God says, throw that away. Cast that into the treasury. Life, your life is worth a lot more than that. Friends, what will you do with the money? Today's entangled story offers two very different answers. You can show somebody deep respect, or you can sell them out. You can do a generous good work, or use the cash to maneuver in the dark shadows. You can throw caution to the wind and honor somebody effusively, because money is no object when it comes to displaying love. Or you can cheapen somebody's life and discount it for next to nothing. It's all what you do with the money. Because as you know, it's never about the money. It's only about what is in our hearts. And for instance, I meet with couples before their marriages. We usually have a conversation about money. For it is one of the top reasons why a relationship can get into trouble. I mean, you know the other golden rule. Who has the gold makes the rules. So money in a relationship always has to do with values and priorities and power. And if there is any battleground in a marriage, money is often the place where the skirmish works itself out. And the root issue is not the money, but what is in your heart. Because what is in your heart determines how you live and what you value. So what was going on in Judas's heart? Was he disappointed by Jesus? Or did he want to force his hand and reveal him as Messiah? Or was something else going on? Another gospel refers to him as a thief and said he always had his hand in the offering plate. And when this woman anoints Jesus, it might have been the last straw. Who knows? Later in the story, he does regret what he does. He repents of it. He comes back. They won't take the money. So he, like Zechariah, throws the money back at the temple treasury. I guess the nicest thing you could say about Judas Iscariot is that he was complicated. And the worst thing you could say is he sold out Jesus for a pitifully small amount. But it's pretty clear how the unnamed woman regarded her Lord. She saw him as a treasure, as a gift of inestimable value. She was willing to show her love, her reverence, and her respect, no matter what it cost. As somebody knows, when she anoints him, she's not draining away resources that could have been used for the poor. To the contrary, her act recognizes that Jesus' death, a sacrificial offering, a saving death, and that every act of love in Christian ministry grows out of that one profound act of Christ's ministry. When the woman anoints Jesus, she proclaims that the death of this man is the miracle that the poor need. Indeed, the miracle we've all been waiting for. So Jesus says, "Truly I tell you, wherever this good news is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in remembrance of her." Meanwhile, what are you going to do with the money?